The extraordinary breach of protocol after top Pentagon officials, members of Congress, and even the White House were all unaware of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's hospitalization this week.
Even Secretary Austin's deputy, his number two, Kathleen Hicks, was not informed in advance of his medical procedure and was on vacation in Puerto Rico, literally in the water, when she was taken back to a secure location.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
Just a catch and strays over here.
You're in for a hell of a show.
Keep the faith. Hold the line and own the libs.
It's time for our main event.
Welcome back to the Ruthless Friday program. A big week in front of us. We are exactly 6 days, as you're listening to this, from the Iowa caucuses. It's been a long time coming. Everybody's had their eye on this for about 4 years, and we're in the home stretch, fellas.
Right around the corner, honestly. Like, it feels like it's been a lifetime of these primaries going on, and we haven't had, like, a single vote cast yet. So, you know, finally, at least we're going to have something like that happen, you know.
Yeah, it's like we watched the longest horse race, and now they're finally in the final stretch.
They're heading the last bend after 3 years.
I mean, with, like, not as much drama as anticipated,
at least
in this first one.
Here at the Ruthless Variety Program, we have several treats in store for our audience.
We do. We've got a big week ourselves. We'll get to all that in a second. I want to address that clip that we had up front, of course, that was talking about the Secretary of Defense. There's apparently in the ICU, without the knowledge of the National Security Advisor, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, or the President of the United States. That's really something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Typically, it's not a big surprise if our current president doesn't know what's going on. But this is a bit over the top.
Well, it's a good thing there's nothing going on in the world. You know?
But we were told at the outset of the Biden administration that the adults were back in charge.
Oh, yeah.
They were going to bring everything back on track, and this is the way Washington should be run. Here's the thing, guys. There were a lot of people on Twitter over the weekend saying that somebody should be fired for this, that heads should roll, and I think that needs to start at the top.
Exactly.
Joe Biden should be fired.
That's the thing.
I would agree.
I mean, there was a situation like they described in that report we just opened with where they were like, they had to pull the Deputy Secretary of Defense out of the water, and they're like, you are now acting Defense Secretary for the United States. Like, what the hell is going on? I'd be like, who's in charge here, man? Like,
I want to get into some detail on this, and we're going to do that in a second. Just want to start. Look, we got a full program here for you today. We're going to do this. We got a lot of different things. We have some variety packed in here.
Mm.
We're going to do a little horse race update because, you know, you're 6 days out. You got to examine what everybody's up to.
Yeah.
We have a couple of big announcements about the program along the way, including, why don't we just do it up top? Smug, you're going to Iowa.
That's right, folks. This is going to be, a huge thing for the variety program and for the people of Iowa and for the people of America. We're going to be live streaming the thing.
We are. And you're going to go out.
I'm going to be live in person in Iowa, reporting from the caucuses, talking to all the movers and shakers, seeing what's happening, and bringing everyone along for the ride live. It's happening live, folks.
So we're going to do a live program. The three of us are going to be here in D.C. walking you through the numbers, telling you what they all mean. We're going to have Smug on the ground in Iowa, talking to caucus goers, talking to campaigns, braving the elements.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at the weather today. The high is going to be freezing. So it's going to be terrific.
And by freezing, he doesn't mean 32.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely
substantially colder than that.
Like, the sad thing is, it's not going to be snowing. Unfortunately, it won't be snowing. I was actually looking forward to that because I know journos always cry about, like, oh God, I'm out there snowing. It's a good time to be had.
Can we help pick out your outfit? Like,
No, I mean, I'm going to be dressed I got my standard setup. Everyone's going to have to tune in and see what the winter gear looks like. I'm ready to brave the elements.
I'm very excited.
I'm built for this.
If you knew how excited we were.
I mean, it's going to be, we've already worked on, you know, getting in touch with folks who we're going to be, you know, talking to and streaming back to the studio live. It's going to be a hell of a lineup. Like, I'm going to call it right now. We're beating any major network.
Yeah.
Like, we punch far above our weight class. You're not going to see this level of coverage on any of the cable networks. ABC, CBS, no one's going to have anything on us.
Well, we're going to also give you some good interviews and things like that you'll be able to tune in for. Make sure to set your alarms, do whatever you need to do to make sure to listen to that live, because that is going to be a great program.
It's going
to
be amazing.
Going to be really, really good. All right, so let's get into the meat of all of this, which is the Secretary of Defense situation. Here's what stood out to me, fellas. So it's ridiculous that you have, at a time of war, where we are engaged not only with the Middle East, Israel, Hamas, all of that, and American troops stationed, you know, in the Navy at least, in close proximity. But you also have what's going on in Ukraine. And somehow the Secretary of Defense, the guy, I mean, literally the guy who runs the joint, has gone off the grid for a period of 4 days and nobody knows it. To the point where, then they're notifying the deputy who was apparently hanging out in the waters of Puerto Rico at the time.
Yeah.
But the thing that struck me was, like, they don't have, like, regular briefings with the president?
I mean, that's the thing. Hasn't been in touch with the president for a while, and Joe Biden's like, well, this is normal, man.
Like, how does that, you just like dust off a Monday briefing book and then you're like, all right, I'll see you. Hopefully I'm back on Monday.
Because we have been getting all these reports of, like, you know, these like drone swarms which have been going after, like, you know, soldiers, U.S. assets in the Middle East. Who was on the other end of the phone call deciding what to do with that situation?
I mean, it
wasn't even the deputy, because they were chilling at the beach.
They were in Puerto Rico. The national security
Who's
advisor
in charge here?
Did not know.
Did not know. Imagine how wild it would be to be like sipping a daiquiri and then finding out you're in charge of the American military.
But like, don't you just, I mean, what it falls into that what do you say you do here category?
Yeah.
Like, if you're the president of the United States, I don't know, I'm sure like he was probably spent all week thinking about what he was going to do for his two big speeches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had two big speeches where he did the Jan 6th thing in Valley Forge, where, of course, there's like a Declaration of Independence type theme to it. And then he proceeds to go to Charleston yesterday. So I guess he's focused on that. But like, you have got close to hot waters going on and nobody has touched base with the Secretary of Defense?
No. That's the thing is, like Ashbrook said, we were told that the adults are now in charge, and it's become extremely clear that these people are not focused on actually running anything in this country. You look at the economy, you look at the border, you look at the way that the United States is seen around the world.
Where
you've got dictators who are taking, you know, whatever they want because they know our president's a pushover. And it might be because the guy's like literally asleep at the wheel.
Get ready for how organized this government is going to be, everybody.
Yeah.
America's back on track.
I mean, it's
unbelievable. We're back. We're here.
So here's a clip from CNN. If we can go, Spaghetti, if we could go to clip one here.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has resumed full duties after a recent hospital stay that was kept under wraps for several days from the public, the press, and even the president. And he is still reportedly in the hospital as of Saturday evening. For his part, Secretary Austin admits he could have been more transparent about the hospitalization, which began on New Year's Day following complications from an elective surgery.
So, all right.
Here's what strikes me is it's not like you're not permitted to get sick as an important official in American government, right? You're allowed to get sick.
Right.
You're allowed to be in the hospital. You can't help it. You got to go to the hospital. You got to tell somebody.
Well, it's like the
and
head
there has
of,
to be
the
some
head
curiosity.
Like, imagine just any of you listening to this where you just decide to go have elective surgery and not tell your boss. You know, I don't care if you're an accountant, you know, or you're like weed eating. I mean, like at some point you're going to be like, hey, I'm going to be out the next
And also, it strikes me as like the Biden administration is trying to like throw this stink off themselves and be like, wow, can you guys believe what the defense secretary did? It's like, dude, that's your employee.
Hoping nobody says like, well, why aren't you talking to the Secretary of Defense?
Yeah.
Right. We have multiple American warships very close to war right now. Very close to what is happening in the Middle East. And we don't have like a daily conversation with the people in charge reporting in on what they're seeing and what they expect out of the next day. That's terrifying.
And they're like, the acceptable response is, well, so this guy on the beach in Puerto Rico has got it under control. Like, one guy's in the hospital, one guy's at the beach. Like, what the hell's going on here? This is unbelievable. I mean, if I'm the guy at the beach, so I'd be pissed off.
It's a gal at the beach.
It was
a gal at the beach.
So if I'm her, I am extremely pissed off because you've landed the best gig. In theory, right? Where it's like, okay, you've got all the prestige. Like, I'm one of the top folks calling the shots at the military with none of the responsibility. I can go to Puerto Rico, have a great time. And so, like Duncan says, I'd be having like a margarita, and then you get a call pulled out of the water. Like, this isn't what I signed up for, man. Like, I accept only being like, you know, at ribbon cutting ceremonies. And like, being defense secretary is not that bad. Like, the old Air Force Ones go to the defense secretary. He flies around, you know, in the old Air Force One. Not a bad gig.
Not a bad gig.
Also, they said it's an elective surgery. That's something you have to schedule. You know, at some point, week out, 2 weeks out, a month out, you schedule that sort of thing.
Right. Well, apparently something went wrong.
Wait, right? Is that what happened?
Well, apparently, the ICU. You don't have to go to the ICU for elective
things went
surgery.
Great.
But my point is, if you are planning an elective surgery at the end of the year, ostensibly because that's when you're hoping things will be a little quieter, maybe you plan it in November, maybe you plan it in early December. Don't you give somebody a heads up that, hey, I'm going to have this thing at the end?
The deputy books a vacation to Puerto Rico.
Right.
Maybe he was embarrassed about it. Maybe he was getting one of those Brazilian butt lifts or something. You know? Had to do it on the hush-hush.
He didn't want
to
answer the question, so what are you getting done?
Yeah, getting a BBL.
Well,
is that a thing?
Yeah, dude.
What is...
Well, that's what everybody thinks Kim Kardashian got.
What is that?
It's like implants for your butt.
For your butt.
They put like silicone in your ass?
Yeah.
People do that.
No, seriously.
Come on.
Unserious people do these.
It would be great if the Secretary of Defense had.
Well,
that.
I think at this point, at the very least, we deserve to know what the hell was happening. Like, when they say like this is an elective surgery, okay, you're like begging more questions to be asked. Like, what the hell is going on here?
Well, can we talk about that for a second? So, all right, so there is an entire team. Every publication in America of note has got a Pentagon team, and they do daily briefings. Now, I had since come to learn that Austin himself had not done a briefing in person since like July, which is very telling. Like, that's ridiculous. Absurd that the Secretary of Defense has not done his own any kind of address with the press.
He didn't like the way his butt looked.
Well, and so he's got a Brazilian situation, which, you know, look, we all have our things. But as nobody in that crew, like, as just a pro forma question, like, well, what's the secretary up to today?
Yeah.
No, I mean, not at all. Nobody's like, okay, so what's the secretary? Does he have a public schedule today? And then they're like, no.
That's a great point. I think like...
I mean, that's like the question that you ask. You don't even do it in the briefing. You send the email in the morning to the press secretary where you're like, what's the public schedule for the secretary today?
I mean, again, I think this is like, just
nothing.
Like...
Well, see, that's the thing is like, there would have to be somebody whose job that is. So I just have a hard time believing nobody knew. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. There's something like crazy about that. I mean, they said at one point that they were informed that he was working from home, which in and of itself, I mean, look, this is not a telecommuter position.
Right.
You got to be in like the crazy rooms.
You
kind of
got to be in the rooms.
Zooming into the Mediterranean.
Yeah, you got to be like live watching the drone strikes and shit. You know, you can't really just like Skype in for this.
Like, I can't imagine that there is a president that's down with that. And yet...
and yet there is.
There is.
It's a guy who was elected from his basement.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to cast
a stone.
He's
like, I get it.
Because I never go to work.
I get it. Maybe he was training some German shepherds or something. Lord knows that's bedeviled this administration. I mean, I just don't. It's bizarre. So anyway, the press picks this up, and the first one out of the gates, Politico reported it out, and then immediately thereafter, Axios came up with just a perfect take on this. It's a Republican's pounce, fellas.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. It's a Republican. Republicans in Congress reacted with swift fury over reports that the Pentagon waited several days to inform top officials about the hospitalization of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin.
Minimizing the foul.
The foul is not the story. It's the process.
Yeah, the reaction.
Yeah, the reaction.
Yeah.
Very important that the Republicans need to be pouncing upon this, maybe perhaps unfairly.
Swift fury.
Swift fury.
That's the story.
Some GOP lawmakers are already calling for Austin to testify or even be ousted over what is described as a serious breakdown in communications. Well, don't you think that just like people just deserve a reasonable explanation?
That's all that is being asked. The very little, like absolute minimum that could be asked is basically what's being asked of this administration. And the defense secretary is like, so what the hell happened here? You know, it's not like...
Yeah. I mean, I'm not asking for like a all-points bulletin that he's in the hospital. I understand there's national security implications for some of this stuff. The guy's the defense secretary. I get it.
Yeah.
But to not inform the White House, the NSC, the deputy of the Pentagon is like, that is a fireable offense.
Well, because there's no one actually in charge at that point. And it's like not an insignificant time period for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Something he shot at. So McDaniel raised a good point on this when he was putting all this together. And he said it reminded him of when Buttigieg went on that like 4-month paternity leave deal where nobody'd heard from him, and they're like, oh, yeah, finally.
Like trains and planes are crashing, and shit's hit the fan.
Yeah, they're finally like, oh, yeah, he's been on paternity leave, like, way after the fact. Yeah. And, like, I think we had a show where we basically said the same thing. Surely that somebody has the transportation beat.
There should honestly be, like, just a daily check-in with the cabinet. I think that might be a good idea for this administration.
Like, but maybe somebody should have a reporter shoot him a text. That's like, hey, is the secretary alive today? Are they breathing clean air?
I think you guys are missing the purpose of the media when it comes to a Democrat administration. The media is there to help. They're not there to question. They're not there to hold people accountable. They're there to help. Think about they're there to help so much that the Department of Defense is putting out statements about how he is taking full responsibility for his decisions, and they think transparency is very important. And how does the media respond? The media is like, well, Republicans are after them. and they're like, wait a minute, what? We've just been apologizing for this, and the media is like, no, it's Republicans who are at fault.
And that's a great point. So when they put out this statement saying that the defense secretary is taking responsibility for this, what the hell does that entail? Like, okay, so what actions are being taken? And so if they're going to describe, oh, he's taking responsibilities for his actions, this is what's going to change, they can't even put that out because they haven't even told us what the hell happened here.
Right.
So how's he going to take responsibility when we don't even know exactly what caused this problem?
Great point.
So, like, people have already been like, okay, journos, it's up to you. You got to run cover for us. Let's go with the Republicans' pounce. And they're like, yes, sir, let's do this. You know?
Meanwhile, the progressive left and Claudine Gay are like, I get it.
Hmm.
I know what you're up to.
I know what you're up to. That's right. I'm surprised that hasn't shown up.
It'll come. We're still in the first 72 hours of this story. It'll get there eventually.
There is something that came out over the weekend. I don't know if you guys saw this. I don't know if it's in we're going to be talking about this later today, but this Semaphore report about the Biden administration and how they're trading with reporters and grading them on their
show. Oh, yeah. No, we got that. We're going to talk about all that because it's a very important story, and it does actually segue into what we're talking about now. But just for the timeline, so everybody's aware, so we're going to go through. So the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff was notified on January 2nd and doesn't notify anyone else of Lloyd Austin's deal. The president was not notified until the 4th of January, two full days later. National Security Advisor, similarly, on the 4th. I imagine that was probably the same phone call.
I mean, nobody wants to send the guy a card?
How about
check in with his family and say, hey, we're thinking about you. What can we do?
Yeah, right. Just say nothing to the national security implications. Like, how about checking in on your cabinet secretary?
Yeah.
Right.
Send us a photo of the Brazilian butt lift.
The NSC also January 4th. So the deputy SecDef was on vacation in Puerto Rico, as we mentioned, and was handed some responsibilities for the Secretary of Defense on January 2nd. He's been in the ICU since New Year's at this point. So there's a calendar day involved where no one had responsibility for the Department of Defense.
Wow.
Wait, a calendar week? Is that what you're saying?
No, a day. A full 24 hours where no one had responsibility for the Department of Defense.
But almost a week of people not knowing, like major cabinet officials. This is
a really interesting little wrinkle in here. So it says here that the Deputy Secretary of Defense, while on vacation Puerto Rico, was handed, quote, some responsibilities of the Secretary of Defense on January 2nd, but they were not notified until January 4th.
So they actually got the responsibilities
yeah.
24 hours, but didn't know they had those responsibilities for another 2 days.
Like they're
72 hours.
They're on the beach and like some Marine, you know, hops over and he's like, okay, you're got to run the military. Just like run with it, dude. We don't need to tell you why, but you're just in charge of things for a little bit.
They're out doing the, you know, yeah. They got like the boat drinks
you're,
going
you're
on.
You're in the limbo line. Yeah. Like Marine hops over and says, you're running the show.
If you like pina coladas.
And it's like, just, and the thing is that like, at this point, the Deputy Secretary of Defense is like, I have no question of why I'm being assigned running everything. Hmm. That's fine. Like, they're not like, okay, so what the hell's going on here? I told you all I was on vacation.
But think about how think about how passive these people are. Remember when there was an assassination attempt on Reagan, and like 15 minutes later, Al Haig was in front of the press saying, I'm in charge here.
Yeah. You know, he was the other side of the coin.
He was about to take over
that
the country.
That was perhaps too aggressive.
A little too aggressive.
Yeah.
And now we have a situation where everybody's like, oh, no, fine. I'm on vacation. Well, no, I'm not going to tell anybody.
Dude,
oh, no, there's a military.
They don't even know it.
Nobody knows.
They don't even know it. That's the best part.
This is the, like, counterweight to Al Haig.
I think COVID.
This is a low point.
COVID ruined everything. It's like, this is like the Zoom presidency. Oh. Everybody just like.
Dude, I think you're right.
The Zoomer logs, boom, Zoomer boomer.
They log onto their computer. They fire up the camera and they're like, I'm on the Zoom. And then.
And they got like gym shorts and a tie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's about right. That feels right. But, like, they don't notify Congress until the 5th. That's 4 days.
God,
afterwards.
Dude. Like,
right? The Navy is not notified. The Army's not notified. And the Air Force is not notified until the 5th.
I don't see anything here about Space Force either.
Hold on. SecDef Chief of Staff Kelly Magisman was, quote, unable to make notifications before then due to illness. Wait, hold on. So that person's out too? Kelly's having a bad week.
Yeah.
Also, you know, just a sniffle, so that's not going to work. We obviously can't get on the horn.
Imagine
any sort of, I don't care what it is that you do for a living, but imagine you have like really important shit to go and you're like, whew, I can't call anybody today.
Yeah.
Not going to do it.
Also, can we, you know, to be a little serious about this situation, what about the folks that are serving in the military?
Yeah.
Because you've got a lot of young folks who are putting their lives on the line for this country every single day, away from their families, and like the folks in charge are not taking this seriously.
And do you think that the people on the aircraft carrier just like miles from danger right now are like, well, I got the sniffles. I can't possibly go up and man my battle station today.
Hope those drones don't take us out. I have the sniffles.
And it's like, they're thinking like, if shit pops off, I hope someone in the Pentagon showed up for work today. Oh, like, we're on a boat on our own? Is that what the drill is?
Sir, I got to fly for my Brazilian butt lift. I got to get out of here.
I love that we've all just embraced the BBL.
I didn't know about its existence until you just brought it to us.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
You gotta stay, you know, like Hollywood hens all over that sort of stuff.
She's got a spreadsheet of the
celebrities who've gotten it done. I'm sure she does.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's gotta be a pretty significant procedure. You gotta sit on that thing. So it's not, you know. No. I don't know. Anthony Blinken.
Yeah, this is also really interesting because it says here, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said he had not been aware that Austin had been hospitalized. The two spoke the weekend before Austin was hospitalized on New Year's Day. So, like, there was an opportunity for the Secretary of Defense to be like, oh, also, I'm getting surgery done.
Yeah.
Well, but hold on.
Nope.
According to the same timeline that they've provided, he was hospitalized in the ICU New Year's Day. So if he talked to Blinken on New Year's Day.
No, he says the two spoke the weekend before he was hospitalized on New Year's Day. So he talked to him
Christmas. Day, like 24 hours before. He's like, oh.
Yeah, a few days before.
Austin's like, I got to knock this out.
Yeah. He's like, oh, everything's fine, dude.
It's
everything's cool.
I got to clear the decks.
Put on the out of office.
Because the BBL is going to keep you on the shelf for at least three
days. It's wild to like have Christmas I get it. You know, things might be a little light and you can stretch it to New Year. But then January 2nd, 3rd, 4th, just stretching that holiday.
At some point, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall when somebody in that operation, the political side, is like, are we not? Are we just not?
But like, that's the thing is, I think they've had it so easy.
Yeah.
Because like the press has no interest in providing scrutiny. I bet they're just like, this is fine, dude. Say Republicans pounce.
They have it so easy. Yep. If this happened while Donald Trump was president, it would be the biggest national security breach since the War of 1812.
Like,
you imagine the war type on the above the fold at the New York Times and the Washington Post? They would melt down.
Do you remember the wall-to-wall coverage when they thought Melania was missing? Do you remember that?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. We spent like a week talking about that. Yeah. Melania watch.
They might as well have printed a story in the sports section.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They won't cover anything else.
All right, so let's transition out of that. We're going to keep an eye on it. I do want to know how Congress ultimately reacts to it because it seems like a chain of the command has been exposed here.
Yeah.
And there's going to be some answers that need to be provided at some point. But we need to get back. So you may have seen yesterday the president was at Emmanuel Baptist in South Carolina and was interrupted by Hamas protest. Well, Palestinian, but
Hamas
protesters, which I found deeply hilarious that you're going to have to ship them far and wide to get them into South Carolina.
Yeah.
But they were there nevertheless, and they interrupted him. And so, like, this is happening across the country, and it's absurd and ridiculous. And you're talking about, like, you look at polling, and it's 20% or less of the American public that find any redeemable value in any of the arguments that they're making. But again, as we've said, a core constituency of the Democratic Party. And so they show up at things like Biden addressing a church where a horrible shooting had happened. I mean, can you imagine? How just completely absurd.
I mean, honestly, you don't know. Those may have been members of the administration. They all signed the letter that they're like, we support this.
That's true.
So yeah. It may have been like, they're like, hey, I'm going to take five, boss. And then they just start shouting outside.
He's like, hey, I'm the intern's just going to take 5 minutes. Hey, fuck you about Palestine.
Yeah. Biden finds out his whole advance team actually signed that letter.
God, it makes you wonder. So anyway, but there was something that made less news that happened in LA that is unconscionable. Can we set this clip up? It's clip number 3.
At Ted's scene in Westwood today, a large group of pro-Palestine protesters marched towards the federal building demanding an end to what they call genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The demonstration appeared to be legal until this. Cameras capturing at least one protester spraying graffiti on the Los Angeles National Cemetery. Organizers say they'll continue to, quote, shut down the streets of L.A. until their demands are met.
Okay, so what we've got there are pro-Palestinian, and this is according to J-Post, pro-Palestinian protesters vandalized a war veteran cemetery in Los Angeles and shut down Wilshire Boulevard between Interstate 405 and Clinton Avenue outside of a U.S. federal building on Saturday, according to KNN, and that was the footage that we saw there. Free Gaza was one of the phrases that was spray-painted across in green paint. Another text painted this time in black can be seen in the footage reading Intifada.
There's also that upside down triangle, the red triangle, which I believe is a pro Hamas, like explicitly a pro Hamas.
Well, if that's just a straight Hamas deal, right? That can't be confused for anything else, right? That's not like there's no subjectivity in what that triangle upside down means. That's just Hamas.
It doesn't mean peace, I can tell you that.
No. So like, you know, the rapings and the beheadings and the killings of innocent people be damned. Now we're going to vandalize a national cemetery of war veterans. I mean, you can't make this up.
Yeah.
I want to know when people are going to get serious about finding out who is funding these terrorist and pseudo-terrorist groups who are running around the country and causing problems. Somebody is funding this. We know it's left-wing dark money.
Exactly.
But there is zero curiosity from the media about who is providing the resources for all of these groups to spring up.
I mean, can we throw that graphic up one more time? This is graphic one. Just want you to take a look at this.
It's just sick.
Free Gaza, the Hamas triangle, an intifada.
Yeah.
And they knew what it was. They can't be like, oh, we were just spray painting walls. It says right there, Los Angeles National Cemetery.
That's it. And they did it above and below Los Angeles National Cemetery, just in case you didn't get the hint.
They're pretty well funded, but I got to tell you, they could use some PR pros to be like, hey, you know what? Maybe not the cemetery. You know?
But it's, I mean, I think that's the thing, is that that's how emboldened these folks have become.
I know.
Is they not only know they can get away with this, I think they enjoy and they take pleasure in doing this. Like the same way, it was just today that every major bridge in the city of New York was shut down by these protesters. Like, they don't care about like whether this is actually winning hearts and minds and bringing anyone to their side. They just want everyone to know that, hey, we can do this. And I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Is they want to show that, you know, they are the beating heart of the progressive movement right now. They are allowed to get away with this stuff. They can shut down traffic. They can deface cemeteries for war veterans, and there's no consequences for these people.
Yeah,
fellas.
In fact, the opposite. One more thing on that real quick. Did you guys see that New York sent checks to the BLM rioters from 2020?
Come on.
The government of New York City sent checks to them, like restitution for their hardship for being like arrested and stuff.
Get out of here.
Well, I mean, if you're going to send them a check when they get arrested, why wouldn't they do this stuff?
Why wouldn't you? You get paid for it.
These are deeply unserious times.
Sorry, Smash, I cut you off there.
The only point I was going to add to this whole ridiculous, like, defacing the Veterans Memorial thing is there are still as many as 8 American hostages being held by Hamas right now. Yeah. That's not on the front of any newspaper. And they're talking of, like, they're protecting these people from, like, defacing American veteran memorials while the people they support are holding 8 American hostages.
Yeah.
Think about that. It is like a twisted mindset in our country right now that has to like reverse itself, or we are headed down a path we do not want to go.
Garbage culture, right, Ducks?
Garbage.
Garbage culture. I mean, seriously, it's so bad. So usually we do our horse race stuff on Thursdays. We're going to still do it on Thursday, but because we're so close to the Iowa caucus, we're going to do a little bit of that. Normally, when Tuesdays, we do kind of a little bit about what's going on in Congress. The reason we're not going to do that is because there's a lot of dynamic stuff happening right now. There was a deal on government funding that was struck over the weekend, which I'll be honest, I'll reserve comments for Thursday. But anybody who doubted that the new speaker had the capacity to make deals, I think they're on the wrong side of that argument. I mean, he's been pretty aggressive here. And
yeah, he got $16 billion in cuts out of it, including $10 billion out of the IRS. So the guy is legit.
He's doing real stuff. And then they have this sidecar of immigration stuff that they're trying to deal with, predominantly from Senator Lankford dealing with Democrats in the Senate. I'm told inside as I talk to people that he's making a lot of great progress on that. Saw him on the Sun. He was on Fox News Sunday before I was yesterday. And let's hope, because that deserves a lot of attention. Let's hope that that comes together. But I'm hoping in the next like 48 hours we get to that point where we have something concrete to talk about. In the meantime, let's do a little horse racing. The first update, let's set up with clip number 4, if you wouldn't mind, Spaghetti.
Caught up with him after the event, and I asked him directly if there's any truth to the rumors that he would drop out if Donald Trump were to beat him. Take a listen.
A lie, totally made up. And, you know, when people, you know, fabricate these anonymous sources and do it, why he's saying that is because he wants people to somehow think, oh, you know, why should I go in negative 20 degree weather to help? No, you should show up because, you know, we're the one that can get the job done for this country. But that report is categorically false.
So what he's reacting to were the reports that were made out over the weekend that he was going to drop out after the Iowa caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, over the last 3 months in particular, there's been a lot of emphasis with the DeSantis campaign in Iowa because they've focused a lot of resources there. We've seen it with our own eyes when we went out there that they are doing that. And if he had some sort of a poor performance, that wouldn't bode well for the future of the DeSantis campaign. That piece of it, I think, is true, that if you do poorly, but clearly when you're a week out, you're not going to talk about the inevitability of you doing poorly. And we don't know. I mean, he could exceed all expectation. It's caucus, right? Mm-hmm. These things are notoriously difficult to poll.
And this is just the rumor mill. Like, this is what happens ahead of every caucus. I mean, remember in 2016, that text message went out that Ben Carson was dropping out.
That's the thing. This is a wild time.
It is. It's truly, we are approaching the silly season. This is the silly season, you know? And remember Trump accused Cruz of sending out the Ben Carson text to try to get his voters. Anyway, all I'm saying is we're going to see a lot more of this over the next week.
Just it's going to come everywhere. But I also remember like the Marco Rubio story that came out on CNN that he was going to drop out after Florida a week before the Florida primary, and they just vehemently denied it and then underperformed in Florida and promptly dropped out. So like you don't know, all of it's premature until you count the votes.
Yeah, but I also saw, so like on Monday, the terrible snowstorms in Iowa.
Yeah.
And Nikki Haley like canceled an event or something, and so then immediately people started texting it out like it's a fake campaign. No momentum for Nikki. What I'm saying is like every campaign is grasping at everything they possibly can to make a last-minute argument, even if it is just innuendo and rumor.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, look, there's a lot of crazy stuff. You can't sort of put subjectivity to, though, is the amount of effort that these candidates have put into Iowa at this point, which is substantial. And if we can pop up graphic number two. Wolf, where's this from? This is from Axios. So this is what we're looking at here is all of the events and where they have done the events in Iowa. And for our audio-only listeners, Donald Trump has done 24 events in 19 counties.
Yeah, these are maps of Iowa, and they basically colored each county in Iowa that has been visited or had an event from the candidate.
Right. Ron DeSantis has done 99 events in 57 counties. Nikki Haley's done 51 events in 30 counties. And Ramaswamy has done 239 events in 94 counties. So he's basically gotten pretty much around the state. Looks to me like by the naked eye, there's maybe five counties in all of Iowa that he hasn't been to. DeSantis is covered almost as much. Nikki, you know, look, she's focusing on the population centers there. Trump, 24 events.
You know, I have a question about the accuracy of this. So when it says number of visits to county, I thought I remember in that article which came out about, you know, when the whole DeSantis super PAC thing and the Jeff Roe thing
that
was going on.
All 99?
Yeah, I think...
Wasn't that one of the points of, like, the same day they want to announce he'd visited all 99?
I think the difference is this is, like, physical events, campaign events in the counties versus visiting all the counties maybe for a coffee or something like that.
Makes
you
sense.
Know what I mean?
Yep.
So these are, like, you know...
These are public events.
Public events, right.
Because I do think that DeSantis campaign maintains they've been to all 99.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which, and I know... Nikki certainly is going to claim more than 51 or more than 30 counties.
Listen, I know we're tough on this guy, but you got to tip the cap to Vivek. I mean, like,
that is some. I mean, that map is
39 events in 94 counties.
Yeah.
The guy is hustling, and I know he's spending a lot of money to not score a high number, but like, you really have to salute the guy's effort here.
Yeah, well, here's the story. Trump, with a big lead in the polls, has stuck mostly with big rallies in urban centers and help from surrogates, such as former Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson and South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. From January 1, 23 through last Thursday, Trump had 24 events, far fewer than his challengers. He stepped up his pace this weekend, which began a series of appearances that will continue through next week. His relaxed approach over the past year has reflected his confidence as a front runner and his court schedule as he faces felony charges in four jurisdictions. Now the former president has rushed to close a deal with conservative voters in Iowa is a signal that he's hoping to crush Ron DeSantis and his hopes from the start and try to stem Nikki Haley's rise. Trump's increasing focus on Haley was evident in a speech in Sioux City on Friday, when he cast the former UN ambassador as weak on the border. All right. Well, I mean, look, we've seen some of this coming. Trump is going to try to close this deal. And they've said this right from the very beginning. They felt confident in Iowa, but they knew that DeSantis, one of the reasons I think that they were so rough on DeSantis throughout the course of this campaign was not only that he was competing with him nationally at the beginning of it, but that at Iowa and what set the stage for the rest of this campaign, he was particularly strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, honestly, it's a testament to the strategery of the Trump campaign and the fact that they are taking a very clinical approach to this election in a way that they just didn't in 16. Not dogging their 16 campaign, but they had one guy in Iowa in 2016 who used to be the driver for Rick Santorum, and now they're like taking a very—
But he was a great driver by all accounts, like awesome. God,
yeah,
Santorum.
No. Great driver, always signaled, you know, when he was turning, didn't run slow in the left lane. But the fact of the matter is—
No, they got killers running the show there. Very serious campaign hands.
But what Josh just said is a very sophisticated approach to mm-hmm. taking out a formidable opponent.
Well, and making sure that you don't get the cascading sort of domino effect, which we've seen happen in elections, where, you know, if everyone has expectations from a national polling perspective that somebody is going to dominate something, then all of a sudden another candidate wins, that candidate obviously takes some strength into the next election and the next and the next. And you got to stop that domino from building. And I think what Trump campaign has done from the very beginning is ensure that the dominoes never start.
Well, yeah, but I guess to put some numbers on it, I would say, you know, there's a big difference between 50 and 40, like 42.
Right? 100%.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like if Trump gets there at 42 and, you know, DeSantis and Nikki are there, like, I don't know, in 20s or something like that, and then the balance is the other candidates, you know, it doesn't look as dominant, you know, when you're the former president of the United States.
Agreed.
Especially when you're going to be then going into New Hampshire where, you know, Nikki Haley has been sort of creeping up on you. So
yeah.
So you think, Michael, I guess I'd ask all you guys this, but you think a scenario where the outcome is Donald Trump 42, Ron DeSantis 25, Nikki Haley 22, you think that scenario keeps the race alive?
I mean, I think it just kind of has to, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like the guy is the former president of the United States. The thought that only 42% are with him in this first contest means it's still a race. I mean, I have to think that. And especially, like I said, in New Hampshire, I mean, there's been like two polls now out in the last couple of weeks where she's like nipping on his heels.
Yeah, a single digit race.
You know, like
yeah.
a 5-point race, a 3-point race. Like, I mean, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I do think, to your point, it's been a long time. In fact, probably never in recent history where you have a candidate that is so well known and so anchored in. I mean, clearly we've not had a former president since like Grover Cleveland do this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're ubiquitously known, you're going to have to edge towards a half your party in order to put the thing away entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, if 60% of the Republican primary electorate is still not sold, that's a big number when you're dealing with the front end of caucuses.
Well,
and primary.
let's just think about it this way. You know, a little thought experiment here. You know, the Democrats are doing, I think, an all-male Iowa caucus or primary or whatever or something. Like if Joe Biden took 45% of that, or something.
Oh, you'd be just
it'd be alarm bells, you know, through the entire Democratic Party, mm-hmm. right? So, mm-hmm. like, I mean, I think that is the reality. Is like, if Trump does come in low 40s, it's a totally different conversation than if he's over 50.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's right. And conversely, look, if polls are wrong, mm-hmm. Particularly caucuses, I mean, things were very different in 2016 than we ultimately were led to believe.
Again, it gets very wild. So, I mean, hand in hand with that, where it said earlier in this article that the Trump campaign had dispatched Ben Carson because he is incredibly popular in Iowa. I mean, like you said, in 2016, I mean, he almost won the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's all these rumors of which campaign sent out the text messages saying that, like, Ben Carson's actually dropping out. There's no point caucusing for him, you know?
Right.
And then Ted Cruz ends up picking up the win there. It's still fluid. And, like, honestly, pretty much anything can still happen.
And Marco had, like, a 10-point close in the last 48 hours. to finish a close third in that race. And so
it was a distant third. He kind of dropped the ball there, but
I know you're not going to give him credit, but it was a close three-way race is my point. And look, we've all been led to believe this is a 30-35 point race. Mm-hmm. If it's 15, that gets some people's attention. And so, you know, one of the things that I think the Trump campaign is going to have to figure out how to manage post-Iowa is the expectations game. Because of this massive national lead, because of the massive Iowa lead, if it's something less than what the polls say, they're going to have to reestablish some momentum in a way that they haven't had to since last spring, mm-hmm. when DeSantis initially was a rumored candidate. So I don't know. We're going to see how that works out.
One last thing I want to add is my advice, you know, for the folks in Iowa, every 4 years, essentially, campaigns descend on your state. And they have to, like, worship the ground you walk on trying to earn your vote. You got 1 week left. I would not pay for a single meal. No. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. You're going to a campaign event. They better cover your breakfast at the diner. I'm showing up to the pizza ranch.
It's going
to
be at least four years before you have this opportunity.
You
got to
go, like, John Kasich in on the buffet line and have the campaign pick up the tab wherever you go. Any campaign event, you got 1 week left, man. I would like gorge.
Hit it hard.
I'm like a bear, you know, getting ready to hibernate for the winter if I'm a voter in Iowa right now.
Yeah, you got
to
be like eating contest level
stuff. Yeah, 100%. So, like, this is your week, folks. If you're in Iowa, enjoy it.
Make it happen. Make them earn it.
Yeah, make them earn it.
Make them earn it. One bit on the Democratic side, there was a very interesting article in the Washington Post last week about how Obama, very concerned about the Biden campaign.
Oh, no.
Very concerned about the Biden campaign. Former President Barack Obama has raised questions about the structure of President Biden's reelection campaign, discussing the matter directly with Biden and telling the president's aide and allies that the campaign needs to be empowered to make decisions without clearing them through the White House, according to people familiar with the conversations. Couple observations out there.
I love this story. I can't wait. I can't wait for these observations. I think
First
I know where they're going to go.
Can you imagine as a staffer how much you would fucking hate Obama rolling in and being like, nah,
yeah,
this is the way this ought to work. This is the way. Here's how I did it. Mm-hmm. This is the way you guys ought to do it.
Because no matter, all these people are essentially like the fourth string Obama team.
Totally.
So they never were like actually making things happen. They weren't part of like the team of stars that Obama's, you know, campaign teams that went and got contracts and podcasts and everything. These are the people who they're like, okay, idiot, go grab the like coffee, get the pizza for the volunteers. And now they're like, you know, press secretary.
But this is to put meat on that bone. That he needs to put decision makers at HQ. Yeah. Or empower the ones already in place. I feel like that one was like maybe a throw-in. Like, I don't feel like maybe that was where Obama's head was at. Hmm. Because then he also said he recommended specific individuals.
Oh, maybe these people talked in the article.
I don't know. Have you heard of these people? People like David Plouffe, who managed Obama's 2008 race. He's the type of senior strategist needed at the Biden campaign.
So Obama's chilling in Martha's Vineyard. He's at the beach, and like he gets a call from his boys, who are like, "Listen, dude, like
he's going through chef resumes.
Pockets are looking kind of."
That's dark. That's dark.
Wow. He's like, "Let me tell you, staffing is tough. Finding good help is tough. Joe, you got to focus on this.
Whatever you do, don't get the paddle boards out too early. I'll tell you that much."
But he's like chilling at the beach, and then like his boys call, and they're like, "My pockets are looking kind of tight.
Yeah,
I think you can get me some of this campaign money." He's like, "All right, fine. I'll call Joe."
Yeah, I'll get him in.
It's about 3 o'clock. He's probably up by now.
We need these kind of people.
And like when it says that Obama grew quote animated, and this guy, he's like,
"Right,
Joe, wake the fuck up, dude. It's me."
He was animated only because he couldn't hear what he was saying. What? What? That's why he was screaming.
I mean, did Biden number one know where he was, and does he call him Mr. President? Like, you know, like he thinks he's still the VP.
That is a great question.
Is he like, "What are you talking about? Your campaign's looking good.
Do you want to take bets on that?"
Like, he's like, "Plouffe is already running your campaign. What are you talking about, Obama?"
I'll bet you my
Obama's
home.
Like, "Holy shit."
That he calls him Joe.
100% calls him Joe.
There's no way that he provides him the deference of calling him Mr. President.
Just negs him.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
100%
Obama calls him Joe, dude.
Completely. There's no way that he does any sort of like deferential treatment
for
Joe Biden.
No, absolutely not.
No way. I love it. Anyway, the bottom line is they're saying that nobody in the campaign can make any decisions because everybody in the White House needs to approve it, so they can't actually make any decisions. Here's a secret. They're not going to make any decisions because they can't fucking do anything with this guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What decisions are you going to make? What email copy to go out?
Yeah.
Because it's not, sure as hell, not going to be a public appearance.
And Obama thinks the email copy sucks, too. Like,
in fact, the only way that Joe Biden can win re-election is if David Plouffe gets 2 points on the bye. That, my friends, is his only path to victory.
There's this gentleman out of Chicago by the name of Axelrod. I think you need to take a hard look at what he says. It's a low cost of 6.5.
So the details of this, I'm looking at this now. This is so awesome. It says, so Obama came to a secret meeting at the White House. They had lunch. So it says here, during the lunch, Obama noted the success of his reelection campaign structure in 2012 when some of his top presidential aides, including David Axelrod, Jim Messina, left the White House to take charge of the campaign operation in Chicago. So he shows up to lunch and he's like, Joe, I let you stay in my house. You work for me and you're fucking it all up, dude. I handed you this easy W and you're still fucking it up. And I bet Joe's like, who am I talking to? You know, like he's probably not even sure what's going on. It's lunch,
yeah.
Which is early as hell for Joe Biden.
Oh, I know. He doesn't.
That's like breakfast.
It's 2 to 4 that are his hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So first off, I think he's extremely confused. He's like, who's this guy?
He's like, he's my Secretary of Defense. Yeah. That was fucked up. I apologize.
But hey, I mean, this is the situation we find ourselves in. Where like,
but he's brain dead.
I mean, because Obama is essentially like still the like good housekeeping seal.
Yeah.
In on the Democrat side,
yeah,
like
he is.
If they have a Senate candidate in trouble, they're calling Martha's Vineyard. Obama, can you drop by, save our asses? And so I bet, you know, to a certain extent, he's like, I'm trying to make Netflix movies. I thought, you know, I told you people I'm done with this bullshit. So I bet he's always in a bad mood when he has to show up to the shit. He lives at the beach.
I will say this.
Good point.
I will say this. Obama's not wrong about a whole bunch of this stuff.
No.
Right? And the thing is, like, the Jim Messinas and Axelrods, I know less about Plouffe, but by reputation, they're pretty good at what they do. I mean, they're solid campaign people. They don't have any of those walking around Joe Biden's orbit.
Yeah. There's not like the dude who's like, oh, yeah, well, he knows what he's doing.
Axelrod was riding them over this Lloyd Austin thing.
Was he?
Did you guys notice that on Twitter?
Mm-hmm. Just interesting.
Like one thing after the other.
Well, I did a Perino show on Thursday with Messina last Thursday, and he was remarkably in line with the strategy of the Valley Forge speech and the Charleston speech, which I thought was noteworthy because, look, this guy's very smart. He's very good. And he has a tendency to be sort of an entrepreneur on all of these things, right? He makes, like, observations that aren't necessarily Democratic dogma. And he wasn't doing, I mean, look, he's good at what he does, so he doesn't come off like he's just reading the talking points. But it was a little, adhered a little closer to the standard that I'd been used to in talking with him throughout the years. So I wonder.
Maybe some changes have been made.
I wonder.
Hmm. And you know what? I bet like
a point here, a point there.
Yeah, a little stuff.
And for the like existing Biden campaign people, like this dynamic has to be like you're the little brother. You know, like Axelrod, Messina will fire off some tweets being like, these guys suck ass. You know, they're trash. We actually knew what we were doing.
Yeah.
Like it's big brother, little brother syndrome. And I bet it's just that same dynamic for Obama and Biden, where he's like, well, you're my dumb little brother. I got to look out for you, you know?
Oh.
I mean, I don't know, but it's a fascinating thing to watch. It's only going to get louder because the polls aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Like we said, when this thing gets to a point where it breaks one way or another, it's going to be kind of late in the game on this deal. And I expect a very cold winter for Joe Biden. And I imagine there's going to be a lot of process involved with that. So the story you mentioned, about Biden campaign bringing in top journalists.
Oh, yeah, right.
The semaphore.
No, I'm glad we're covering this.
Yeah, so President Joe Biden's reelection campaign has begun organizing a series of off-the-record trips for top political reporters and editors. let's get back to that in a second. To the team's headquarters in Wilmington, Delaware, to meet top officials, including campaign manager and deputies and other senior advisors, for background briefings on campaign strategy. Interesting. They're also using it as an opportunity to tell them what they're getting wrong.
Oh, interesting.
Two people with knowledge of the situation told Semaphore that during meetings with reporters from outlets like the New York Times, the Washington Post, and others, the campaign officials have invoked a coverage spreadsheet laying out areas where the team believes their reporting has fallen short.
Only Democrats.
Amazing, right? In particular, the campaign officials have chafed at some of the coverage of former President Donald Trump, feeling that the outlets are too focused on his legal troubles and haven't paid enough attention to some of his incendiary recent statements on the campaign trail.
Can you imagine how condescending this whole thing would be? Like, they pull out a spreadsheet and they're like, okay, Washington Post, you get a gold star for your economic coverage. We really appreciate it. But you see, this is a storm cloud. Your foreign policy coverage has a storm cloud. See, we don't like that.
They brought him in for parent-teacher night. They brought him in for parent-teacher night.
In sum, we love the inflation is actually good framework.
Right. Yeah.
We don't like that Donald Trump may be competitive framework. That's not going to work for us. No gold stars.
No.
But you have another opportunity on your next assignment. Yeah. And here's what we want you to write.
You can make
about
up for it with some extra credit.
We'll give you some extra credit, exactly.
And to talk with you is going to be Jim Messina. No, dude, I mean, it's incredible. The audacity.
Yeah.
Also, it tells you a lot about what it is that they're, like, the whole mindset over there when they're like, you're focused too much on the legal troubles and not enough on the incendiary things that he said. Is there a single American, I mean this sincerely, is there any American, center, right, or conservative, that is surprised by anything Donald Trump says? Or oh, well, that's the straw that broke the camel's back.
I don't think there's any American at this point, honestly, unless they're like a journalist or they're just trying to, like, you know, or they have a vested interest to try to make hay of anything Donald Trump says. I think everyone knows Trump's gonna say whatever the hell he wants. I think we got that out of our system and accepted that in 2016. Like, what are these people talking about? Like, oh, well, shit.
But also,
Trump said this, I'm done with
him. If you were offended by anything, you've got a catalog to work with. I mean, we got 6 long years of amazing tape to be offended by.
Yeah.
There's nothing that he can say that is going to be worse than what he's already said. So if that's what you're focused on, like, that's not a strategy.
That's why, folks, Jim Messina. Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, David Plouffe and Jim Messina.
Fellas, what gets my attention most is the blame shifting. That the Biden campaign is saying, no, it's not our fault. It's not our president's fault. It's the media who is not writing the correct things about Donald Trump.
It's back to our whole thing with framework.
And Barack Obama. It's not my fault. It's the Biden campaign is not running a real campaign's fault. So they're already blame shifting, and it is January of 2024.
9 months.
And they all know they're going to face Donald Trump in November, and they think they're going to lose.
You think so?
That's what this tells me. They think they can lose.
Oh, no question. And that's Obama wouldn't be doing that sort of stuff if he wasn't trying to cover his ass on that front. Like, I think they do think that they could lose this race. I will say the idea that they went out and did the Valley Forge speech was predominantly about Jan 6.
As if any Democrat thinks about Valley Forge and the founding of our country in any other context.
Right.
I mean, think of it. Like, they don't want teachers to teach about Valley Forge.
Yeah.
They don't want anybody to learn about Valley Forge
right.
until it's the time to frame it under a Democrat's context. Sorry, go ahead.
But I was just going to say that in concert with the Emanuel Church in South Carolina tells me they look at the same polls everybody else does.
Yeah.
They know that they have an intensity problem. They know they have a base problem. And they know that if those people come home, that they're probably going to be in good shape. And then the Jan 6 stuff is, for the last 2 years, the thing that got them over the top in the midterms in terms of that and abortion. So, like, if you're looking for a playbook for what Joe Biden is going to do here for the next 9 months, it is going to be abortion. It is going to be Jan 6. Trump is dangerous. I put that in the same silo. And that it is a series of events like the one that he had in South Carolina that is just exclusively focused on base turnout. Like, those three things.
Can I add one more?
What?
And this is more a, like, they'll do this primarily through surrogates and left-wing podcasts and stuff like that. But a vote for a third party is a vote for Donald Trump. Is going to be a big push for them.
They've already started with that.
Because you look at that USA Today Suffolk poll and everything where Biden, I think, is only winning 65% of African-American voters.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump's, like, still at, like, the historic average of Republicans, like 12% or whatever.
Where he'll be precisely on election day.
And all the other African-American voters are like, yeah, RFK looks good. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so that's going to be part of their strategy as well. A lot of it, I think, is solved through the other stuff that you mentioned. You know, democracy is at stake and that sort of thing. But they're going to talk brass tacks, too, with the electorate, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's a little bit more of a process, but I understand what
they still talk about Jill Stein. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
probably not out of the president's mouth.
No.
But it is something they're going to push. And you're going to see a lot of that stuff on your front page of the newspaper to the extent that you even pick the rag up anymore.
Can I kind of one thing to this? The other side of this, when, you know, this campaign team is bringing in journos and giving them, like, a parent-teacher conference, like, the things journos do for free food. Because I guarantee this is like, hey, guys, we're going to give you some, like, sandwiches and cookies.
It'll be like California Pizza Kitchen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. If it's like an actual restaurant, like, journos will kill people. If it's free food, you can demean these people however much you want. You can spit on them as long as they're being given a free meal, you know? That's like, it says a lot about the state of journalism and how subhuman these people are. Like, you're going to let someone demean you and give you a talking to like you're a child?
Ashbrook, how do you respond to that?
Bro?
I think this is exactly what Smug's going to do next week in Iowa when he wants Pizza Ranch.
Well, I'm going
to give me free Pizza Ranch.
All the campaign folks, you want positive coverage? It's simple. Hook it up at the Pizza Ranch.
Feed me.
You start to see a lot of really positive Ron DeSantis tweets in his feed. You figure out that he went to Pizza Ranch.
Just a picture of him and Polyansky.
I finally learned how this journalism and media stuff works.
He's like, this isn't a bad gig after all. Incredible. All right, but you have some more exciting news.
I do.
And we wanted to announce it here on the program because it's going to be available as you're listening to this.
That's right, folks. So we had been teasing for a while that if you subscribe on YouTube, if you go to Ruthless's YouTube, you're going to be seeing some exciting things that you're not going to be getting through the podcast. And one of them is we were graciously invited by the Nixon Library in California for me to pay a visit, take a look around the place, talk to the folks there. And today, January 9th, to celebrate Nixon's birthday, we are releasing that video on YouTube. You're going to see... I mean, this is truly an incredible place.
Why don't we go for a little preview? Can we get a little preview clip? Let's get a little preview clip so we see what we're talking about here.
Ooh, I love the music.
Wow, look at this. Can you believe it? Wow. Jesus.
This is incredible. Amazing.
Smug, welcome to the Nixon Library.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been like a lifelong dream.
Well, this is where we make dreams come true.
Thank you so much. So today, we get to have the full tour, right?
We do, yeah.
And y'all are lucky. You get to join us for a tour of the entire library just for you. Your private tour. Thank you so much. I can't thank you enough.
Let's get started.
I think the record should show that this is one of those spontaneous things that we always arrange whenever the president comes in to speak.
So when the museum was renovated in 2016, we took a pretty novel approach. Mm-hmm. We wanted to throw the visitor into the 1960s. You know, normally the presidential library, have you been to any other presidential libraries?
This is my first. Oh, started at the best, right?
Picked a good one. So normally they, you know, he was born and then he did this and then he did this. We threw that concept out. You know, we wanted to throw people right into the 1960s and show them the chaos and the turbulence of what was happening.
I mean, that seems super cool, dude.
It was incredible. And again, you know, thanks so much to Jim, the whole team over there at the Richard Nixon Foundation. They had the place closed off. It was only for us. For our listeners, for our viewers, You guys, it's like you get a personal tour of this library. It was mind-blowing. You have to see it. You got to see it.
Now more than ever.
Now more than ever.
Now more than ever.
Now more than ever. Excellent. Yeah,
and definitely subscribe to YouTube and get turn on the notifications. Hit that bell thing. So then you'll just get the push notification when we go live for Iowa next week and everything. You don't want to miss it. And I mean, just from the promo, that library is a hell of a place.
It's incredible. Totally. It really is mind-blowing. Absolutely beautiful place. I highly recommend everyone go and visit. If you ever get a chance to go out there, that place, not Disney World, is the most magical place on Earth.
And what's amazing is that there are places with that high of esteem that still let you in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, thank you so much for that.
They gave you free carte blanche in the place.
It really is an incredible, incredible experience. Highly recommend folks go visit it and definitely check out that video.
Well, yeah. If you want to see what it's all about, you got to subscribe and get in on that because you're going to love every minute of that. All right, boys, you want some... Want some variety?
Yes.
Always.
And you know what, Smug? This is kind of like right up your alley. We're going to get right into it. I don't know if you guys saw this clip. I'm going to play the clip first, but it is stunning. Can we do clip 5? That is a hole in an airplane.
My God.
That frightening incident above Oregon late Friday prompting Alaska Airlines to ground all of its Boeing 737 MAX 9 jetliners. The flight had taken off from Portland bound for Ontario when a door plug fell out, leaving a hole in the fuselage. The depressurized plane landing safely with no serious injuries. The NTSB investigating what caused this terrifying mid-air scare.
Oh, dude, there are tens of thousands of feet in the air.
Yeah.
And a side of the plane just blows off. And the cell phone video for your audio-only listeners, it's like the people who are sitting there are in a convertible. It's like you're just looking at at the straight outside.
Everyone's just like looking at this hole. It's chilling.
What's remarkable is it looks very like self-contained.
Didn't it?
Like somebody just opened the emergency door and pushed it out.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm totally surprised. I would always thought that like in that situation, it's like in all the movies where they show.
Everybody gets sucked
like,
out.
Yeah, you get like sucked out. Everyone's just chilling. They're just watching. But also like... Isn't this like the way of things in coach? It's like, you don't know what's happening back there. Honestly, they're just cut an air hole for these animals to breathe. They should be like, oh, you know what? Thank you for this. Steerage usually doesn't get good air.
It was an Alaska Airlines flight, which clearly does not fit into the typical whipping boys of the airlines.
Domestic is always a nightmare. They all drop the ball, especially relative to the rest of the planet. But Alaska's one of the better ones. If you have to fly domestic, they're your better bet.
Well, until now.
You know what? If there's a hole in coach, I don't mind.
Just unbelievable. What,
they still give pre-flight drinks. Like, they're a real airline in that response.
What was the situation where, like, after some period of time, the steward walked back and...
Yeah, so I saw a clip, and I think this is probably after they landed. So, I mean, look, this plane, the side of it falls out. And then, like, it seemed like a more self-contained operation there than I would have imagined it to be. Mm-hmm. Probably because, I don't know, they were at a reasonable flight. They had to go down below 10,000, obviously, because of depressurization.
Oh,
and all
that's
that.
Why. That's yeah. why. Okay.
So they did. At some point, I'm guessing after the landing, I saw a flight attendant walk back and look at the row where this hole is in the plane, and the last seat of the plane before the hole was empty. He's like, just to be clear, was there anyone sitting there?
Not anymore.
They're like, no. And he's like, oh, thank God.
Thank God.
And like,
I mean, poor kid.
I'm so shocked.
Can you imagine if you just had the, like, you're just sitting in a Jeep? Except you're going 500 miles an hour at 16,000 feet, and it's just like ripping past you.
I can't get over how calm all these people are. Like, while this is going, they're all just like silently staring at the hole in the plane.
Guy brings the Kindle back out.
Exactly. Just playing on his iPhone.
I mean, honestly, though, I would rather see the hole than be up there in first and have no idea. What is wrong?
What, like the tail could be missing.
Yeah, right. Like you can't see. All you can hear is the whipping of all of this wind in the plane, and there's a oxygen mask in your face. For all you know, there's no rear of the plane.
I would not want to know. Absolutely not, dude. I'm surprised there was no like flipping out like no one went crazy, because the problems are always in coach every time.
Come on.
That's where there's fights. Like, no one started fighting. No one, like, you know, I'm completely shocked
no
by that.
No fight? What do you mean? You can't take your seatbelt off. You end up.
These are coach people, bro. They're like three to a row, packed in like sardines. These are angry, dangerous
but
people.
There is a trade-off.
So many emails.
There is a trade-off. I had an uncle who is a PhD and an expert in these things, and he said that the safest place on an airplane is in the back. So you are trading off luxury for safety.
Well, I don't want to be like, if the plane's going to go down, I want to go on impact, dude. I don't want to be in the aftermath, like, you know, the Skinner guys who were like screaming for a while before they died. Like,
Skinner guys.
I want to be splattered on impact, be gone. But like, and also no one in coach, like, usually when there's like something happening, if there's a delay, you can start hearing the people in the back being like, I need pretzels, give me food. You know? Like, no one here is demanding like stewardess sandwich. I'm just very shocked. You know, congratulations for those people to remain calm.
Smug. You know that Uruguayan rugby team that crashed in the Andes, and then they
like started eating each other.
Yeah, well, the dead bodies. You know,
they ate each other's asses.
They did. Yeah,
are you serious?
Yeah. It was
well,
terrible.
The reason why I bring it up is like there's a new series on Netflix or movie on Netflix called Society of Snow, which is about that whole thing.
Oof.
Doesn't turn out too good for the people in the front. That's all I'm saying.
They get their asses eaten.
Yeah, so all the rows basically like scissor up like an accordion on them. Not good.
Science shows that the back is safer.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Well, yeah. Whatever the case is, the most intriguing part of this story, in addition to the fact that they all landed safely, thank God, is that during when the hole blew out, some dude's phone.
Oh.
With it.
That's insane. Dude.
Right?
I don't know how anyone's
put up
calm.
Graphic number 3. This is this guy's phone.
Are you serious?
It plunged 16,000 feet from the plane.
Wait, it's still working?
Yes. It flew a number of miles. Am I right, Wolf? Like it, because you're going like, you know, 300-400 miles an hour. So like this thing drops out of the plane. It flies by itself because, you know, I mean, it's a flat surface. It does its thing. And it goes several miles, lands into the ground, and is recovered. And it still had what he was looking at on the plane when the hole blew open, like he was trying to find his bag receipt.
This is hilarious. So, like, he got charged a bag fee. It says he had to pay $70 for 1 year.
Well, I hope they refunded his bag fee.
That's the thing is
70
like,
bucks, pal. Hold me up.
I wish I could have been there at the gate when they're deep planing and like what kind of deals are they having to make for these folks
yeah.
oh
at
my
that
God.
Point where Wait, they're so, like, so, okay, we can give you a food voucher. Who's down with the food voucher? Who's taking that bid? You know, like
what do they have?
Putting a hole in your
what
plate?
Do they have to offer? Unlimited flights to Juneau?
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
I'm going to go back and forth once a week for the rest of my life. Nothing, no place I'd rather be than Juneau.
Wolf, what was the story with, it was still on, so it was pinging.
It was in airplane mode.
It was in airplane mode? How did they find the damn thing?
The guy was walking down the street, picked it up right up off the ground.
So somebody found it.
He called the NTSB and said, I think this is from the plane, and the flight number is on the screen.
So what Wolf is telling us is that somebody was walking down the street and found this phone alongside of the street and called the NTSB because it was open to the bag receipt of the plane that just blew a hole in it.
Yeah.
And said, I think this is probably from somebody.
That's pretty lucky.
Can you imagine? You're like, well, shit, I lost a phone out of the whole deal. The next thing you know, it shows up. It completely intact. Hats off to iPhone, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
Huh? And OtterBox or whoever was the case manufacturer of this thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
seriously.
They owe...
they should...
Tran Kong.
What?
Yeah, that's the name
yeah,
of the individual.
Yeah, yeah, Tran Kong. I mean, I'm probably butchering the pronunciation.
Oh, yeah, no, Tran Tran was the guy who lost the phone.
Yeah, should be on an ad campaign.
They should have him on an ad campaign. That is as good as it gets.
I mean,
talk about
so insane.
You can drop this phone from 16,000 I mean, feet, and it's fine.
Tran, buy yourself a lottery ticket.
Because
right. You're pretty lucky.
I want to know what they get, though. I want to know what they get.
What
out
Tran
of
gets?
All the people who are staring at the hole.
Like Tran better have some seriously free shit.
Yeah, you better ask for a lot.
You don't get away with blowing holes in your airplane.
I mean, the lawsuits are... So this was, I believe, the Boeing 737 MAX, which has previously had some issues.
Jesus,
and like,
isn't that the one that went down like all over the place?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the lawsuits that are going to come out of... Like, the passengers on that plane, man.
Maybe
like,
Boeing wants to start a new body style. I'm just saying. Like, maybe this one, it's bedeviled.
Yeah.
In many ways. Oof. I don't know. Well, anyway, you want more plane news?
Always.
Just giving Smug the content he wants.
This one fits right into Smug's barrel
of
his bat. So let's play clip number 6. You will not believe it with your eyes, and for your audio-only listeners, I will explain it to you. Here's a plane in the dark of night, and somebody...
Oh, you're kidding me.
What is that?
Dressed their child in a bunny outfit. We got to play it again. Dressed their child in a bunny outfit that is flashing neon lights throughout the course of the trip.
Imagine a bunny costume full of Christmas lights that are set to like rave pulse.
Yeah.
And everyone's trying to sleep on this plane.
It looks like an EDM show.
It's insane.
The best part is the kid's sitting there and then the ears go up and down every once in a while.
You know he's a real little shit because he's making eye contact with all of them.
And I love the dad is staring at the person with the camera phone being like, what are you going to do? I'm an iPad parent. What are you going to do, bro?
I decided to give all of you epilepsy.
Yeah.
So my child stays quiet for the duration of this flight.
If the emergency window blows out and then you see that, you're like, this is a setup. Yeah. I've been had. I'm on the absolute wrong flight.
I've been had.
But this is the thing.
Welcome
so like,
to Pan Am, sir.
So I know you folks advocate like parent lawlessness on flights. You're saying you're okay with that.
You're folks,
that's totally cool.
No, why would I be okay with that?
You're typically like, oh, you know what, Smug? Let him have iPad parents going ham. The kid can do whatever it wants. It's up to society to deal with it.
That is not what I've
said. That's been your take, typically.
That's not my take at all.
I mean,
so you draw the line at like Rave Rabbit. Like Rave Rabbit is
you're
where
not
you're
good
like,
with that, are
okay,
you?
Finally.
I am not good with Rave Rabbit.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. That's not next in the flying hopper.
In my
flying hopper.
My bag of tricks?
Yeah.
No, my bag of tricks is like coloring books. Yeah. Okay.
Imagine trying to remember the Rave Rabbit.
How does that get through TSA?
I don't know. It seems like it was completely electrified.
Like, that thing's going to be, like, wired to hell.
The ears were going up and down.
Like, you just wearing that in the terminal?
If they're wearing it in the terminal, it never would have gotten through.
They had to put the kid through the x-ray.
They had to actually put him in the machine. Fed the kid feet first through the machine. Unbelievable. This next one comes courtesy of the family of Wolf, I believe. And this is fantastic. It falls into our animal category.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out, according to KCRA, California wildlife officials warn against Tahoe flyers, telling people to feed the bears.
Wait, what?
Feed the bears.
It seems like what they're doing here may be a little mockery of the woke. Because what they have written is, there's something for every citizen of Tahoe at Lake Tahoe needs to know about our black bear population. They're suffering considerably. The black bears of Lake Tahoe are some of the most marginalized and oppressed species of life that I have ever seen. A black bear requires a certain amount of calories every single day just to provide it with the energy to survive. Where do I begin to speak about this tragedy? If you see a black bear, they're always walking real slow.
Hmm.
This is because they are not only not receiving enough calories to operate properly, but because they are eating nasty, rotten things that human beings throw away in the garbage, which is making them sick. If they're even lucky enough to find garbage, as they spend most of their life going from garbage to garbage can, finding it locked due to the selfishness of human beings. The horrendous Don't Feed Bears campaign was dreamed up by people too lazy to sweep up garbage supposedly created by the animal. If you can still cling to this concept, you should be absolutely ashamed of yourself. The so-called scientific reasoning is they don't want They don't want bears to become reliant on people or food. It goes on to talk about how you should just actually feed these animals directly by hand.
Has Smug been seen in Lake Tahoe recently? Because it seems like something you would do.
Fellas, this references Hank toward the bottom.
Oh, wow.
Did you notice that? And they will praise themselves for sending a mother they called Hank to Colorado and her cubs to the California coast.
Yeah, see, I think that this might be created by our people.
Oh.
It's comedy. It's comedy gold.
I'm looking at KCRA. They're saying that, like, wildlife officials are saying this flyer is false and that,
like,
bears can absolutely survive.
Please do not listen to this flyer. Do you think it's Minions?
It's possible.
Do we think it's Minions?
It's definitely possible.
Incredible.
I wouldn't recommend feeding the bears.
No, for the record. I don't think it's... We've advocated war.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include feeding them. Certainly not by hand. But it seems like the Hank reference gets very close to home here. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Doesn't it? Well, we're making an impact, folks. We're making an impact. Last story in today's program. You'll love this because it fits perfectly in line with everything you know about progressives in government today. California state health insurance to cover sex changes for illegal immigrants.
Mm.
Is according to
this is beyond satire.
No, it's like a Mad Libs.
Is according to Fox News, nearly 700,000 illegal immigrants between 26 and 49 will qualify. The Golden State is expanding its massive health care system this year, which means more taxpayer dollars will fund sex change surgeries for state residents regardless of their citizenship status. So how you blow in past Tijuana, you decide to chop the old willy off, and you're going to get it free of charge, courtesy of Gavin Newsom and the state government of California.
What an insult. I mean, like, first off, it was crazy that when I saw the headline that starting January 1st, illegal aliens in California will be given free health care. Right? Where, like, I mean, we've all heard stories about how long veterans have to wait for health care in this country. And they're giving carte blanche. First at the line is going to be illegal immigrants. This is just unbelievable.
Well, hold on. Listen to this memo. According to a memo first circulated in May 2022 and reported on by the Daily Caller Foundation, California's Medi-Cal covers costs for hormone therapy and procedures. Quote, that bring primary and secondary gender characteristics into conformity with the individual's identified gender, including ancillary services such as hair removal, incident to those services.
It's unreal.
So, like, free waxings?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like we're going to deal...
We're doing waxings.
Wait a minute. Is a Brazilian butt lift
included in this? Bet. Well, if you identify as a butt lifter...
Look at these numbers. It says these services, which will cost California taxpayers an estimated $3.1 billion.
Oh, my God.
For those living in California illegally, it translates to approximately $4,058 per year in medical coverage subsidies funded by the state's general fund. This is straight up just like cause and effect. So when we saw during the Democrat primary in 2020, when every one of those candidates was asked on stage, hey, would you just like give every freebie possible to illegal aliens, every single one of them raise their hands. Well, this is it. You're seeing the result of that. So when they tell you that, like,
they mean it.
Oh, you know, Uncle Joe and all these Democrats, they're moderates, the real radicals out here, conservatives. You're seeing all of this. They told you they were going to do this, that, you know, U.S. citizens are now second-class citizens. The people who are going to be given care, like, they're being put up in hotels in New York City, like, very nice hotels in New York City. Well, there are actual people, American citizens, struggling to get by with inflation the way it is. This is disgusting. Such an outrage.
It's disgusting. Last thing before we kick to the end of this, I know you boys had to have seen the Bass Pro Shop situation the weekend.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
No.
Thing? All right, Smug. So I think, I don't know, if it was it in the Bass Pro Shop, the place that you were talking? It might have been.
Was it in the pyramid?
No, it was not the pyramid. It was in Alabama.
Oh, it was in Alabama. Mm-hmm. All right, so this dude gets completely naked and goes swimming in the fish pond. Like, you know, I mean, the way, if you have never been to a Bass Pro Shop, it's an aquarium.
Despite this, I would highly recommend it. Like,
it's an aquarium.
No one reacted. Like, to me, that seems like one of the places you can get away with the least amount of bullshit.
Well, there were several observations to make. He was arrested. no question, is Paul Adams.
But I mean, even like the shoppers, it's a good crowd. These are like family, God fearing people. Well, they
did,
Bass Pro.
They did what God intended, and they filmed them on their iPhone.
My God.
And this gentleman, I was just slightly overweight, jumps in and starts swimming around, and then like hangs on the glass. Mm-hmm. It's like wangers on the glass.
There's fish in there too.
Waggling his legs.
Yeah, he starts waggling his legs. But here's the thing given his endowment, I'm actually not sure it qualifies for a decent exposure.
That is brutal. And honestly, the segue from the sex change operation
that's what made me think of
to
it.
This guy, yeah. Poor fella.
That's what made me think of it.
Water must have been pretty cold.
I was like, the first thing was like, water must have been pretty cold. But then I thought like, maybe he had like some kind of a procedure. Surely like the clips that we're seeing, they've just like blurred everything. Nope.
It could be like name of the Hollywood Me Too guy?
Oh, yeah, Weinstein.
How like in depositions they're like it looks like hamburger boiled meat. Tuna. You know, like it doesn't resemble.
Well, one of the funniest things I saw on Twitter was a guy who said this is what happens when no SEC team makes the national
Oh my God! Well, it was a terrible sight, but justice is going to be had in the great state of Alabama, as you can be assured.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, fellas, I think we did. I'm very excited about your Nixon thing. I'm very excited about you being in Iowa. We've got a very big show starting at 7:30 Eastern, right?
Monday night.
7:30 Eastern Monday night, and we're going to be giving it hell for the Iowa caucus.
It's going to be amazing. Absolute banger of an episode, if I may say so myself. Gentlemen, thank you so much to our listeners. Again, go to the YouTube, subscribe, turn on the notifications so you don't miss out. So, until next time, minions, keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs. We'll see you on Thursday. Stay ruthless.